You are listening to a Banzai Retro Club podcast. Language and topics may not always be appropriate for younger listeners. Press 1 for a groovy topic from the 1970s. Press 2 for an awesome topic from the 1980s. Or press 3 for a slamming topic from the 1990s. Please choose now. Too late. We have made your selection for you. Let's start the show.
Cool. All right. Well, do you want to start the show?
Well, there's one other item that we need to discuss first.
Okay.
You said something about Short Circuit.
Oh. Are you sure you don't want that?
Or do we want to include that in the actual show?
It's up to you.
You know what? Okay, we'll do that. You know what? I'll do my routine. Am I recording? I'm recording. Okay.
I am also recording.
Perfect. I'll intro. I was about to offer it to you, but then I thought, you know what? I'll go ahead and do it.
Okay, cool.
This is 70-something podcast.
Evel Knievel sold separately or with the Evel Knievel stunt cycle from Ideal.
Use the force, Luke. Let go.
HR, pop and step. Push your belly when things get rough. HR, pop and step. Can't do a little cause you can't do enough.
This is Banzai Retro Club. Can you dig it? I am Dave, and I've got Scott online today.
Hello.
And so Scott and I are together. We decided that we wanted to talk about something 1970s. We've done a lot of things in the 80s, and I think we've done quite a bit 90s, but not so much 70s love lately. So I suggested that, you know, we really need to focus on something pretty significant for the 70s. And what I landed on was talking about 1978's Superman. And the reason why this is kind of fresh in my brain is because that recently I've been subscribed to DC Universe, which is one of those online things like Netflix. And I'd watched The Death of Superman, which is an animated DC movie, and there was an actual scene in that animated film that showed Clark ripping his shirt off with the iconic S behind it, you know, as he's running. And every time I see that, I always think Christopher Reeve.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really fresh on my brain, and I even tweeted about it, and a lot of people were kind of like liking that and agreeing with me. So that's why it's kind of fresh in my brain, and I've just always loved what Christopher Reeve brought to this movie. And I thought it was really well done by Richard Donner, as a director. Fun movie, and I always felt that when you watch this, you truly believe that a man could fly, because Christopher Reeve kind of brought that sensibility to it where you were like, he's really enjoying himself. This is really, you know, he's really into, and it's exactly the way I'd be if I could suddenly fly. I'd be like, I can't believe this is awesome, and I would be enjoying the ride. And that's what it looks like. This character, you know, as it was portrayed in this 1978 movie, and that was all Christopher Reeve. He had that just really great presence of just somewhat normal guy, but having fun with these powers. So that's why I kind of love and kind of geek out about this movie, because I just really love the simplicity of how he's portrayed. And then you get all the really fun lines in it where you were like, you know, flying is the safest way to travel, you know, and it's when Margot Kidder is falling and then he catches her and he's like, "Don't worry, I've got you." And she goes, "Well, who's got you?" Yeah, it's just really fun lines all throughout that are iconic. So that's why I had Superman on the brain. You were pretty quick to agree to talk about this. Was it a good one for you?
Oh, absolutely. It's probably my favorite Superman of all the ones that have come out in the last, you know, since I've been alive.
Okay.
I haven't watched all of them, but I've seen a couple of the new renditions of them. But this one, and it might have been the timing of this one too, because I was a kid, you know, I was 9 years old. So it just, I think it really was the fascination of the supernatural and him being from another planet and it just really fit into the fascination of an imagination of a kid at 9 years old.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that was part of it. However, I didn't probably see it until I was probably 10, because I think it was probably on VHS or something or HBO or something. I can't remember how I saw it. I don't remember seeing it. I can't tell you if I saw it at theater or not. We might have, though. My dad used to like to take us to the movies quite a bit back then. So just a great, great version of this movie. And I do like – I really like what Christopher Reeve brought to the screen on this one too. I believed it, you know?
Yeah.
It was – like you said, it was – it just seemed like it was believable at the time.
Yeah.
For him, you know? Like right. he was selling it, and he was selling it good. So it was just really fun. And, you know, I'm sure we'll break it down a little bit into, you know, certain scenes and stuff. But yeah, this is definitely my favorite version of Superman.
Your favorite version of Superman. So given the movies that followed this one, is it your favorite?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Even Superman 2, Superman 3, which was the one with Richard Pryor?
I think that was 3.
3?
Yeah.
I mean, it was funny, but that's what it turned into. It turned into more of a comedy, you know, because Richard Pryor was in it. I remember 2 was with the 3 criminals had been banned into that glass world or mirror world or whatever it is.
Yeah, was that what was that called? Yeah,
I'd have to look it up.
Yeah,
actually, I like that one was good too, but still, I think the first one is still the strongest. It's still my favorite.
I would pick 2 over this one.
Really?
Yeah. I loved the aliens or the bad guys, Zod.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just the iconic, you know, kneel before Zod.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. And then there was another, one of his sidekicks, Ursula, was her name. And, you know, these were just bad guys from, Krypton,
mm-hmm.
That had, you know, been banished, like you said, whatever that, that parallel world or whatever that they were stuck in, that had gotten free. And it was kind of a, somewhat Superman's fault, because he was saving the Earth from a missile and then directed the missile out into space without realizing what was around in space. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of his fault, but at the same time, I the characters or the foes of the Nemesis in Superman 2, I like them a lot more than what was going on in Superman 1.
Oh, with Gene Hackman?
Yeah.
Lex Luthor.
I didn't mind Gene Hackman so much, but the people that was with him, like Ned Beatty, Otis.
Yeah. And Mrs. Tessmacher.
Yeah, Tessmacher. Tessmacher. Valerie Perrine. Is that his surname?
Yeah.
You know, the Zod character, he had one imbecile sidekick. But Lex Luthor, who's supposed to be the criminal genius of the world, is, you know, surrounds himself with just idiots. And, not, you know, idiots by, like, normal people standards, not somebody that's a genius.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, come on. You can find somebody better than that. So, to me, it was because of the bad guys that were center stage in the movies is why I'd pick two over one.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
Go ahead. They're both very good, but I think the first one just stands out for me because I think it was like the first superhero movie that I really got into.
Sure.
So I think it just holds certain value because of that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's got the nostalgia factor. You know, it's kind of the first one. And I agree. This is really kind of the first like superhero movie that really roped me in, and you know, I went along for the ride. You know, and loved every minute of it. Because it'd be years before we had a good Batman movie. You know, not until 1989.
89, yeah. 12 years later.
Yeah. So, I would think that if what those movies came out, you know, the 78 Superman and the 1989 Batman, if DC would have kept going down that road, I wonder if they would have been a bigger force to deal with than they are now for the movies, like Marvel's taken over.
Oh, right. Speaking of, I just saw Avengers.
Oh.
Infinity War. Infinity War. That was pretty good. Pretty good stuff.
Yeah, we're all pretty excited about seeing the follow-up to that.
Yeah, when's that coming out? Next year or this year?
I don't remember. But it's a little ways off. Yeah,
I can't believe how much it cost to make that movie and what that did at the box office.
I had heard something about it being that it's going to be so long that they're going to have an intermission.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But man. Captain Marvel, when that comes out, she looks like she's going to kick ass. So I'm like, you know, they're filling the gaps, you know, with, you know, backstories and things to carry that along.
Well, they killed off like a bunch of people too. Oh, spoiler alert.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Important people. I won't say who.
Yeah, that evil Thanos.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is not a Marvel episode. No, we're talking DC. So if you had to pick a favorite character from Superman 78, who would be your favorite character?
Superman.
Well, yeah, I think that's easy. Yeah.
I mean, he was fun to watch through the whole thing.
Yeah, I've got to go along with you on that. And I guess maybe a better question would have been if you exclude our main hero, which supporting cast member was your favorite?
Well, I really did like Gene Hackman as Lex too.
Okay.
I know he had doofuses as partners, but I thought he carried a good posture through the movie. And I just liked the way he played it. Okay. So I'd have to go with Gene Hackman. I love Gene Hackman though. Gene Hackman's a great actor.
I'm debating in my brain between Margot Kidder and Marlon Brando.
Oh, Marlon Brando, yes. Yeah. His father? That was pretty good too.
Yeah.
Such a short part of the movie though.
But still iconic.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard not to, you know, think of Jor-El as anyone but Marlon Brando.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Probably Margot Kidder.
Margot Kidder was good too.
Yeah. Yeah. She really did really well in the Lois Lane role and the woman that's not going to take any shit. you know, she's just kind of absorbed in her own world, you know, and yeah, when you've got like somebody that's right next to you that, you know, it's kind of obviously, you know, Clark, you know, being Superman, you know, in everyone else's mind when they're watching a movie, you know, and all it is glasses.
Right. But that's all it was ever.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that's true. That's how it was originally written. You know, that was when the comic was first started.
Yeah.
That's all you could see with the difference was his glasses.
Yeah. Speaking of, have you ever watched Kill Bill?
I've never seen Kill Bill.
Oh, there's this in the part two. Kill Bill is actually describing why he's such a fan of Superman.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes into this theory that, you know, in all other superhero characters, people have, you know, they're the person that they are. You know, Peter Parker is Peter Parker. He puts on a suit to become Spider-Man. Or Bruce Wayne is Bruce Wayne, and he puts on a suit to be Batman. But
Wonder Woman.
Yeah, you know, but, you know.
Oh, no, Wonder Woman's the other way around. Yeah.
Well, true.
But, no, it's that way, too.
But you know, in the essence of Superman, he was born Superman. He's always been Superman. So the alter ego that he had created, this Clark Kent character, who is kind of a, you know, a weak kind of guy, kind of a doofus, that's Clark, or that's Superman's view as to what a normal man is. So he's actually portraying what his view of mankind is. But he's always Superman.
Hmm.
So that's how he's different. And, you know, I guess in the case of Kill Bill or Bill, you know, the reason why he enjoys Superman more than, you know, all the other characters.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting take on it.
Yeah. I never thought of that or put that together. You got to leave it to, you know, the great Quentin Tarantino to write such a great dialogue scene. I'd look it up if I were you. I'm sure it's on YouTube. Yeah, okay. He goes into quite the description of kind of his thought process, but he's leading into the reason why she was trying to hide, or she was a killer, and she tried to escape that world and be someone else. So he's telling her this story as a setup to try to go, well, why did you escape our world and try to be something that you're not? Because you're born a killer. Mm-hmm. So, but if you hadn't watched Kill Bill, then it kind of gets lost in translation. So I'm sorry for that.
Oh, no worries. No worries.
But, yeah, you know, me segueing for once. But it's on point. You know, it's on point for the Superman movie and what's fun about it, you know, because you had Christopher Reeve portraying, you know, this very strong, capable superhero and having, you know, who's believable, but then also having to play kind of the nerdy, goofy reporter.
Awkward.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he did both very well.
Oh, yeah. He did play both personas very well.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great movie just overall. And I like, you know, from beginning to end, and there's certain parts of it that I'll never forget. I think, Supertramp on the radio when she goes into the, San Andreas Fault when the missile hits.
Yeah. Yeah.
Into I think the... Supertramp. Give a little bit of your love to me.
Is that what was on?
I believe so.
Okay.
I don't remember that. Might be good trivia to figure that out. Pretty sure that's Supertramp.
Let me see if I can just hit song on the radio on Superman 1978. See what comes up. Trivia questions and answers. 35 questions and answers about Superman 1978. Can I actually ask these questions?
Ask me some questions and don't tell me the answer. Let me see if I can get a few.
Let me see here.
After you check the music thing, if it's on there.
Yeah, I'm still scrolling. Oh, that's a good question. Where does Miss Teschmacher's mother live?
Good Lord. Oh. Hackensack.
Hackensack, New Jersey. Nice. Good job.
Holy crap.
Pull that shit out of nowhere, dude. let's see. Give a Little Bit by Supertramp. Way to
go.
Thank
you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Very good.
What else you got?
Superman stops a gang of burglars and chases them to their getaway boat. One of the crooks attempts to attack the Man of Steel, but to no effect. With what does the crook try to attack Superman on the boat?
I think it's a knife. No. Man, I want to say it's a knife and it bends on his chest, but I don't know.
Is that your final answer?
Yeah.
It's actually a crowbar.
Oh, crowbar.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's see. Which classic actor played Superman's Earth father?
Oh, Glenn Ford.
Yep.
Yeah, that's cheating. I saw it earlier.
Okay.
But I remember it was somebody, I always remembered that it was somebody that had significance as the actor. You know, he was a well-known actor, in years gone by. But I remember that was like a topic or something that came up. Oh yeah, it's Glenn Ford playing his dad or whatever.
So this is the question that stopped me earlier that I decided to keep scrolling through, but I want to come back to.
Okay.
What color was Lois's underwear? You remember, she's doing the interview with him, and he is talking about his x-ray vision. And then she goes, okay, what color are my underwear? He couldn't originally see it because she was she's behind like a lead planter box or something.
Yeah, and then she steps out from behind it and
right.
He says red.
What color?
Red.
Nope, pink.
Pink.
Close enough.
It's a tone of red.
There's a lot of these have to do with like actors' names.
Oh, okay.
So I'm just trying to see what, like, you know, actual, like, movie references. I'll go to the second page, see if there's something there.
Hey, I'm happy with Hackensack and give a little bit, so.
Yeah, you actually did really well there.
Those were strange things to be able to remember.
What does Jor-El, Superman's natural father, tell him he must not do?
Oh, do not interfere with time.
Close enough.
Something along those lines.
Yeah, don't interfere with human history.
Human history, okay.
Yeah.
Right. Which is what he ends up doing at the end of the movie anyway.
Right, yeah. And
they keep playing that back in his head too as he's going around.
Right, right.
He keeps hearing his voice telling him, do not interfere with human history or whatever.
Yeah, and he just did
that
for the
rage of turning the world backwards so it goes back in time, which is really a ridiculous concept, but it's fun.
Yeah, visually it was like awesome, and you think about it and you go, well, that's really a fun concept, but that can't work, right?
Yeah, no. Time's still going to move forward, whether the planet's going clockwise or counterclockwise.
So you mean to tell me if I'm trying to get miles off of my car, if I jack it up and put it in reverse, it's not going to get rid of the miles?
Yeah, especially if it's a Ferrari. And don't back it up next to a glass wall that it will fall out into a crevasse.
At least you got the reference.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Let's see.
So do you want to walk through the movie a little bit or talk about certain scenes that are your favorites?
Yeah, you know what? Other than me scrolling through these questions and just stammering. Favorite scene. It's what's always iconic, you know, it's the him trying to shed his reporter suit in order to be, to be wearing the Superman outfit. Mm-hmm. And I remember that, you know, he's running around and he finds a phone booth that's not like a full phone booth. I think it's in this one. If not, then it was in the second one. But, you know, that's always been iconic to me, is him running and taking, you know, his shirt off and having that big S underneath. And I mean, it kind of gives me a little bit of, chills, you know, cause it's just so iconic and I love it. I love that view of Superman. So to me, that's, you know, always an iconic scene. As far as like the most fun scene, I've got to probably, talk about the helicopter thing where he's saving her from falling.
Mm-hmm.
And, he captures her and then captures the helicopter and takes them both and, you know, puts them safely on top of the building. You know, and that's just, you know, the power of Superman. What about you?
Well, I mean, I think the end when he's going, when he's trying to save all these people from the, from when the earthquake happens.
Yeah.
But that one is really good, but I always thought it was really cool when he went up to the north, wherever he was, in the,
the Fortress of Solitude.
When he first throws his green piece of crystal out and it creates this awesome fortress of solitude. And I just think it's the coolest place. You know, it's got all these crystals and everything. Seems like it might be a little chilly, but, made of ice and all. But I just thought that was such a cool part of the movie. I didn't expect it. You know, I think I was surprised by it because it was something that was not like you didn't go into a movie of seeing Superman and see how the fortress was created. So I just thought I was like really interested in that. Thought it was cool.
Oh, by the way, I finally figured it out. Phantom Zone.
Oh, the Phantom Zone. Yes. Mm-hmm. That's the mirror world or whatever.
Yep. Didn't want to have people like having this end and not having gotten that one, you know. So a little bit of research helped me out with that.
I thought it was the Forbidden Zone.
Oh God, I knew it wasn't that. And I'm glad I just didn't blurt that out, even though it was in my brain.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's not a podcast that can go by without at least mentioning that movie.
I'm going to start doing solo shows. Wait, I already do that.
Yeah, you do. Don't forget to, we want to talk about that last one.
Yeah, I know. I know you're biting at the bit to give me some feedback on Short Circuit.
Yeah.
But still talking about Superman 78, and mm-hmm. I keep throwing the number out there like that, kind of significant, but I think it is.
Very significant.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if there's any other scenes that are kind of fun. I guess even though I gave Ned Beatty, Otis's character, a little bit of static there, there was that scene where Lex is explaining to Superman, you know, the reason why he's invested in all this land on the other side of the San Andreas Fault. And, you know, he's got this big glass map that's on there, and then he has Otis throw it down on this, you know, the map on the floor. And Otis had written in Otisburg, you know, on the one little area.
Otisburg?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a Otisburg. Small little place.
You know, Ned Beatty, he's a really good actor too. And you hear about him from years and years ago. This was kind of towards the, I'd say closer to the end of his career. You know, he really didn't do too much after this that I can remember. Not too much. I mean, maybe a few movies here and there, small roles, but I thought he was awesome as Otis. He really played a doofus very well. He really did. The bumbling sidekick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you know, to give Teschmacher a little bit of credit also, there was
Valerie.
Yeah. And there was that scene where Lex had put the kryptonite on Superman and then threw him into the pool. And then she saves him because she wants to make sure that he's going to save his mother. Her mother.
Her mother. And,
yeah. And Hackensack. Yeah. And so, but before she takes the kryptonite off, she kisses him.
Mm-hmm.
And I just always remember that, you know, and it was just kind of like, you know, once the kryptonite's removed, he's like, why did you kiss me? You know, it's just like, yeah, of course, you know, it's not like I'm going to have the opportunity to kiss Superman, so I'm going to do it now.
Right. It's not like he's going to, yeah. Like they're going to kiss afterwards.
Right. Which I thought was kind of fun also.
Yeah. I also like the flying scene with Margot Kidder.
Lois Lane, yeah.
Yeah, when they're like after their little interview and he takes her for a flight.
And yeah, it was just
fun, you know?
Now here's a question. Why the hell did he let her go? Do you remember that? She was kind of spreading her arms out. Like, you know, she was flying like a bird, and they were kind of like just had their fingertips gripped, and then he kind of just lets her go and lets her fall for a little bit. And is he just trying to scare the shit out of her? What was he? I mean, do you remember that?
Yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah. Like, why would you do that? Why are you being a jerk?
I mean, he catches her pretty quickly.
No, he does. He does. And I think he's just being playful. Because, you know, he had it all under control, obviously. But, I mean, if it was me and I'm trusting him, I'm like, no, don't let go. Yeah. That's just creepy. But that's me. I guess I would need more like a safety harness than just holding his hand.
like sky jumping tandem.
Exactly. It's like, we're going to strap me in, brother.
Yeah, right.
I don't need you getting froggy and just feeling like, you know, okay, I'll just let you go for a minute. That ain't happening.
You know what else? Something about this movie also was the score. The musical score was done really well.
Oh, yeah.
Not necessarily the soundtrack itself, but the score. Just
so iconic.
It really is. And that's when they did good scores, too. I mean, that was... You look at Star Wars.
Yeah.
77. You know, Batman or Superman 78. That during that time, or even Jaws.
Yeah.
You know,
not just the soundtrack made the movie, but the actual score, the music that's going on behind the scenes as you're seeing it. There's so many movies now that I just don't feel it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And
you don't hear that same type of build, or maybe you do hear it, but we've zoned it out so much that you don't pay attention to it.
Yeah. But I mean, you start going, da, 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 da. You know, Superman.
Yes.
It's like, that's all you've got to do. You just start doing that. And yeah, that's forever tied to Superman because of this.
Like the Imperial March,
Yeah.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yep.
It's so part of the movie that the movie experience. And I feel like we've lost that.
Yeah, I can't think of a movie that I have
I'm going to start paying attention more to the score itself.
Right.
Like what's going on behind as the movie's going on. Just to see what happens. So see how they incorporate it. Cause I mean, like the Avengers, the one that we just saw, Infinity War.
Soundtrack
was awesome. Like the music that they throw in there, like Rubber Band Man, and just so many others.
I don't know. I think the Avengers, sound. I can't think of it right now where I can do it, but. I seem to remember that being very iconic. Avengers soundtrack Arrival. Wonder if that's it. I don't even know if I know you probably won't be able to hear it, but. Yeah.
I don't hear anything.
Oh, well.
However, if you're recording, it will be probably picked up on your end.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was just kind of scrolling through anyway. But I think that one might be significant.
Okay. Yeah. I might have to go back and watch 5 minutes or 10 minutes of it just to pick it up.
Yeah.
So it's on Netflix right now, so.
Okay. So anything left to talk about with Superman?
No, I don't think so. I think it was, it's so awesome to me just because of the time. I think of the timing, the nostalgic feel of it. And it was just really, for its time, it was very well done.
Okay.
Special effects were pretty decent too for the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, they were definitely hitting their stride with that. and it's modern day movies. Obviously, really have, blown circles around for it. But for late 70s, this looked really well. And it was believable, like we talked about, where you almost really thought that Christopher Reeve was flying.
Yeah, it was very smooth.
Yeah.
It didn't look too staged. And they had to use actual physical special effects back then,
right?
More so than a lot of the technical special effects like they do now. I mean, everything is green screen,
right?
And computer animation and stuff like that.
Yeah, a lot of CGI.
How much did this one take to make?
Let's see, I've got the IMDb page open here. Let's see,
5 million. That doesn't sound right.
Budget was $55 million.
That seems like a lot for back then. And gross then, USA was $134 million.
Yeah.
Cumulative worldwide gross was $166 million. So they really didn't make much money on this movie. Barely three times what they paid to make it.
Well, that's success right there. If they make a dollar more than it costs to make, then that's a success.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you see the Avengers numbers?
No.
It cost somewhere around $350 million to make. But at the box office, they made $2 billion worldwide.
Of course.
$2 billion. It's crazy. Anyway, great flick. Good pick. I'm glad we picked this one to talk about specifically versus just being able to, you know, ramble through it real quick on a 1977's movies episode.
Yeah. Yeah. No, anytime that we can put like a focal point for like a movie or TV show, I think that kind of, I like to do more of those.
I would too.
Yeah.
I think it's a good idea. And I have a list of a few movies. And when we first started the Banzai Retro Club is when I started making these lists. So I have some 70s movies that I want to talk about. Superman didn't make it to my list. I think I just kind of forgot about it.
Huh. Okay.
But I also have a list of 90s movies too.
Oh, okay.
You know, like, which one, I know one you won't know anything about, and that's Braveheart.
Yeah, I never heard of it.
I know you've heard of it.
Yes, I've seen it.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, you have seen it once?
Maybe twice.
Okay. I've seen it many, many times. It's my airplane movie.
I gotcha.
If I have to fly somewhere, I throw Braveheart on, it kills all the time.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, I want to save the short circuit talk for our post discussion. So
okay.
I am going to wrap up this episode by just reminding everybody that we have a website out there. You can go to bonsairetroclub.com and, you know, subscribe and follow, you know, to all of our different social media endeavors. You can drop us an email or you can leave us a voicemail on the website.
Remember, it's only 90 seconds, so get your point out quickly. just a heads up.
Yep. So all of those ways that you can stay in contact with us, give us your feedback, let us know your thoughts on Superman 1978. We'd love to hear that. And outside of that, I think we just still want you also to do a review and subscribe if you have one of those fancy iPhone devices or iPads, whatever. So please go out there and do that. We did make a little bit of a change on our iTunes profile. So it now shows 70s, 80s, 90s. So we're hoping that that's going to help some more people that are looking for those specific years for a retro podcast that they can find us. But, you know, our best bet is you just telling them about it. If you're a listener, a regular listener of ours, go out and tell your friends about us and have them listen.
Mm-hmm.
So outside of that, did I forget anything, Scott?
Buy some of our swag.
Oh, yeah, yeah. we got
buy
merch.
A shirt or, merchandise. Yeah, buy a shirt or a hat or something and advertise it for us.
Yeah, I've got my long sleeve Banzai Retro Club shirt, and I also have the Banzai Retro Club coffee mug, which is.
I still got to figure out how to get stickers. I want some stickers.
We okay. You can't let me drop until we look at that.
Okay.
Okay. So this is where I remind everybody to have a or be excellent to each other and have a good whatever. Bye.
Party on.
This has been a Banzai Retro Club production.
Banzai Daniel-san!
Hey, Banzai!
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 All right. So what's biting? What's bugging you about Short Circuit episode? Is it bugging or is it just Dave? You're awesome.
No, not Dave. You're awesome. I'm sorry.
Oh hell, dude.
No, Dave. You are awesome.
Oh wow. However, you're gonna.
I'm going to have to disagree.
Fuck. Okay.
Heavily with Short Circuit.